Professor Cindy Shannon-Wyckert has made it her life's work to try and find a cure for schizophrenia. All mental illnesses can be distressing, but I think schizophrenia has a certain attachment that makes it truly troubling. Her twin brother, Scott, suffered terribly from the illness. She has seen firsthand how debilitating it can be. Scott died suddenly from a heart attack, and it's his memory that drives Cindy to continue the quest to find a cure. She is the Macquarie Group Foundation Chair of Schizophrenia Research, and I'm delighted she can be here today. Cindy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jeff.
The first media question is always the, is it realistic to believe that one day there might be a cure for what schizophrenia is?
Absolutely. I believe that there's not going to be a cure for schizophrenia, but that there'll be several. And in fact, one cure is already upon us, in that it's been recently identified that some people with schizophrenia have an antibody that begins to attack their brain. And when you actually get rid of that antibody, those people are relieved from their schizophrenic symptoms. It's a very rare form of schizophrenia and can often progress into epilepsy and paralysis, but still it gives us proof of concept that schizophrenia has a biological basis, has a physical basis, and when you get to the root of the problem and you reverse it, you can reverse what we call schizophrenia.
So we have here already an understanding that this is brain chemistry, that this is a physical manifestation of a psychological condition.
Absolutely. So when we think about our behavior and we can think about our mind, we can think about it very abstractly, but there is a physical, cellular, molecular basis for our thoughts and actions, and we're beginning to understand that as neurobiologists. And as neurobiologists, we can begin to understand that there's different subtypes, biological subtypes of schizophrenia that are going to require different forms of therapy or different cures. And with modern molecular tools that have advanced so rapidly since the cloning of the human genome, we not only have to look at one candidate pathway or one molecule at a time, we can literally look at thousands of molecules. And with new computer analysis, we can look at whole orchestras of molecules or the whole the whole symphony at once of how the brain is communicating, how the cells are communicating to one another. And using that technology, we've been able to identify different biological subtypes of schizophrenia. And the therapies that we're currently using to treat schizophrenia aren't aimed at any of those biological subtypes. So we're going to see a big change in the way we approach the disease using those biological insights to repurpose drugs to treat those deficient pathways. As an example of that, I've recently finished a clinical trial on a selective estrogen receptor modulator that I'm going to talk about in the forum for Meeting of the Minds later today. But it actually involves repurposing a drug that was developed for osteoporosis and using it to treat schizophrenia to bring about benefit in memory and attention for those people with the disease.
Okay. What we're hearing so far is the extremely skilled scientist. But your involvement with schizophrenia is also a personal story. Can you tell us about your brother, Scott, how he suffered when he was diagnosed and what schizophrenia represented in your family?
Yeah, so I would say my brother and I were normal kids. We enjoyed playing hide and go seek and playing softball and sports, and we enjoyed going to school. We loved math. We enjoyed.
Did you share things because you were twins?
Absolutely. So we shared our first day of kindergarten. We were in the same class. We shared our homework. We often, in rainy days, would have to play Monopoly together. We shared watching television. We shared family vacations. We would argue, of course, about which program, you know, each other wanted to watch. I was in favor of, I believe it was the Avengers, and my brother was in favor of Star Trek. So we'd have to alternate. But, you know, it was normal kids, normal sibling stuff growing up.
So when did things go awry for Scott? And can you tell us how it manifested itself?
So I guess I first noticed it in high school, and I noticed that rather than paying attention in school and competing with me for grades, he would be staring out the window. And I remember also him feeling bullied at school and him not being able to sleep at night and him complaining to my mom and my mom rocking him to sleep, basically saying, don't worry, it'll be fine, you know, just toughen up, try to go back to school. But eventually it got so bad, or he perceived it, that people were picking on him so much that my mom allowed him to quit high school. But she said, I'm not going to allow you to give up on your education. So she sent him to a community college. But it was part of this sort of inability to pay attention, feeling deficient, feeling victimized and withdrawing socially that were the first signs. And then he would spend a lot of time in his room playing Beatles records backwards, saying that they were speaking to him. And so one day he would be really bizarre and the next day he'd be normal, like, oh, what's for dinner, and talking about TV shows or sports or something. And then it would vacillate to him being very unusual again, and then saying things that didn't really make any sense, and then actually becoming violent towards my mom. And that really what precipitated us becoming aware of him having serious mental illness with, you know, more ongoing delusions and hallucinations. And so I really didn't even know what schizophrenia was. And so we were totally in the dark about it until he got the diagnosis after going to the police station.
Okay. Just before we get to the news, my guest is Professor Cindy Shannon Weickert, and she is in Perth, part of the Meeting of the Minds, talking about her experience with schizophrenia, talking about her brother Scott. Now, we know Scott died of a heart attack. How important is he to you as a motivator for the work that you do? Because I know that there is a community reaching out to hear and hang on every word you say. If you're able to say, we can bring some relief to you, we can bring some relief to your families, we can demystify this condition.
Well, that's a tall order. I hope that we can do that. In terms of how motivating Scott's illness was to me, it's my primary motivator. It's the reason why I went into the illness, or into the studying the illness and trying to find a cure, because I saw him suffer from the medications that were available. And I thought we needed to be able to offer the psychiatrist better drugs to be able to alleviate this condition, and for me to be able to go to college and progress in my career and get married and develop as an adult. But seeing all those things denied to my brother, so he couldn't go back to school, he couldn't finish school, he couldn't find his partner, and he was just as bright and capable as me, and as likable, and I felt he was robbed, and I thought we should be able to do something more. And I was very naive, thinking, oh, I'll go in there and figure out the biological basis, come up with a new therapy, and get on with my life. And that was, you know, 30 years later. So I've actually invested a lot of time and energy, and it's really because of him, in the hope to actually, well, to help him and people like him.
Thank you so much for being in the studio today.